Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I hate Windows updates. Yeah, really, I do. Hate is a powerful word. It's a destructive word. And in this case, it's an appropriate word. Yeah, really. You know, they come through and then everything doesn't work anymore. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Bill Gates. No, really. You shouldn't have. No, really, you shouldn't have. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to hop into the chat room, which I'm doing right now. Ta-da! There we are. Yes. Well, or in a minute. There, yeah. Oh, hey. Great, and if you'd like to, thanks, Hoghead, but no thanks. I'm not going to be trying Linux. I tried it again with considerable help from Mr. Gibson, and nope, it's a little bit more usable, but not much. Not for me, at least. The chat room is there and chatting. The real-time multimedia madcap zany extravaganza is there for your enjoyment. As long as you don't own an Apple computer that tries to use Java. And so thus we say good evening to Hoghead, Jug-a-Punch, Labor Man, Steve from Georgistan, and Tim from L.A., who reports a 107 balmy degrees at 7% humility. 7% humility. Yeah, right. Yeah. This is... if you want to go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in there. You will be in mighty good company, and folks will be tickled pink to note your arrival. Oh, too many things, too much stuff. All right, though, I think we've got some things reasonably well in hand. The new broadcast week begins. I haven't mentioned that this is indeed the 15th day of August 2016. Mm-hmm. Which means that August is about halfway over. So, let's see, we try to raise $200 every evening. One at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4, and 64 at $3.13, because we round up. The interface for all of this is at headonradionetwork.com. Just click on contribute. There you will see a data field, and you fill it all out except for the part about where you work and why you do it and who you do it for. And if you'd like to If you would like to become a monthly subscriber, which we do deeply value, and thank you over the weekend to our subscribers who helped us to start the week okay. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thank you, Jeremy in Vermont, Loud and Clear on TuneIn. I appreciate that. But if you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, it would be wonderful. Just click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And it'll happen, and you don't have to think about it at all. You don't have to think about it. It just happens. And, it's kind of easy that way. So all of the housekeeping is out of the way now. Good. I'm trying to really hate the latest improvement to Skype. Question coming in from, and this is one of the beautiful things about our little community. Question coming in from Jen in Australia. Wanting to know, are Jim and his mom in Louisiana staying okay? I haven't heard from Jim. Anybody in the chat room heard from Jim? Because a big old slice of hell on earth has yawned open in the Gulf Coast again. You know this. Massive rains, the kind that one expects to see with, climate change, which is conveniently a hoax, but... Jen notes, are Jim and his mom in Louisiana staying all clear? Which suggests a Moran Monday nomination. The ass-mouthed braggart, I have reflexive look-away tick at the sight of that gob, for calling climate change a hoax and using bigly in a sentence, but also his odious campaign spokesman, Katrina Pearson. Where did they dig up that piece of work? The Advisory Committee on Enforced Gun Ownership at Liberty University or the Congeniality Committee at the NRA? Seriously? Obama invaded Afghanistan? Yeah, that's a nomination. We'll get to that in a minute. That's a real live, honest-to-Jesus Moran Monday nomination, Katrina Pearson. Or, for that matter, I did the high. I'm Bob Kincaid, damn it. Don't confuse me. But though we got just about the entire Trump campaign is good for a nomination. Bigly. I love that word. I mean, I'm guilty of I'm guilty of making up the occasional word. But. I know when I'm joking. The Mar-a-Lago Mussolini doesn't. Anyway, Jennifer says, I better make my point before a lecture ensues. Oh, we've started something, haven't we? I think I'm about to be nominated for Moran Monday if Drumpf is by... ramping up the imbecility to lunacy, manufacturing a way to go on vacation before the election. Would it be out of the question to write in Bernie? Sorry, I never said letting go was easy. If only more of us had found the courage that for us, for so many, burgeoned when Bernie mobilized millions. I know it's a big if, but if Trump were to implode, would we no longer be forced to vote for the lesser of two evils? Would a national write-in... Bernie campaign be at all viable? After all, he's the Trump fuck's best second choice, there Fuhrer concurs. Even if it's risky, we might at least force HRC to win by a tighter margin and deny her a mandate, yes? Oh, wait, no, the stay-at-home Republicans would swarm in droves to vote for Pence, because he's a good and decent man, right? Damn, never mind. Emily Letella, never mind, Emily Letella out. A bigly footnote, Jen adds, because we love these kinds of facts. The tomato bug Acrosternum hilare. No, really. The tomato bug. Last name is Hillary. Has the common name of, wait for it, stink bug. Yeah. Has the moniker improved? The orange stink bug? I like the cadence of tomato bug. Then again, ass mouth braggart is so satisfying. Well, yes, it is. And the idea that the stink bug's second name is Hillary, well, you can't get, no. I mean, look, I'm a political grown-up. I know what time of day it is, and I know what Hillary is versus what it, and, you know, honest to God, I was over, those of you truth seekers will recognize the name, For Earth. I saw a post on from Earthy's feed earlier today. And it was apparently a clip from CNBC that featured some guy. I don't know, it just makes me laugh. Some guy who makes robots. And you know how sometimes you just look at things and just for an instant your brain misfires? I saw the phrase high tech the other day, and it registered in my brain as hot trash. Like that. Well, so Earthy had this thing about this guy who makes robots, and they're going to be human interactive, and they're really interested in people, and they're going to be deployed eventually in the medical field, and they've got learning AI and cameras in their eyes, and they can make facial expressions and all kinds of stuff. But I just kind of, you know, glanced before I clicked. And I thought, wait a minute, is this some sick joke? Has somebody made a Hillary robot? Because it was there. I mean, she did. She looked a right smart bit like, you know, Hillary. And that's not me making fun. She just kind of did, except back there in the back of her head was all like wires and silicon chips and motherboards and shit. So, you know, there's that. But just for a split second, the mind goes, what? So it is, it really, really, and for truly is More and Monday on the Horn. And we've got a nice little stack of More ands. We really do. Also got some, I love the correspondence that I get. Apparently, Friday's conversation, or some portion of it, inspired a little bit of thinking, and I love thinking. It's beautiful thinking. I love thinking. Oh God! Yeah, now here's a sobering thought before we go any further. What if Trump were competent? Would Hillary even have a chance if he was halfway competent? If Trump were not the Washington generals with their shoelaces tied to each other, she'd be in a lot more trouble than she's in, and might even lose. And that kind of echoes something in another email that I'll share with you in a minute. But I started thinking about over the weekend, everybody, and it's giddy. It's giddy. I've seen it in a number of places. No, really, it's giddy to see people say, well, this is going to be the death of the Republican Party. This is the end of the Republican Party. The Republican Party is going to... just coughing up blood on the stoop, you know, back on the back porch, just lying in a pool of its own sick. The Republican Party's going away. Won't be any Republican Party very much longer. Has anybody looked at a map? The Republican Party has a goddamn death grip on more than half the states in this country. And yet, for some reason or another, people who consider themselves progressives, liberals, deep thinkers, keep wandering around talking about how the Republican Party's dying and Trump's the one who killed it and little.
Hey, bub, Kimmy.
Donald Trump has opened up a new way of thinking about being a Republican. Donald Trump is incompetent. Donald Trump has the vocabulary of a third grader. Donald Trump has the emotional stability of a howler monkey. But if, for a moment, in the midst of all the chuckling, you take a sec and you ask yourself the question, what if somebody was doing what Trump's doing, but was doing it from the perspective of a sharp, conniving, wealthy, probably fairly well-educated, Ivy League type, you know, wealth 1% class perspective, this country would fall all over itself to elect him. Things are changing. But a path has been cleared. A trail has been blazed. And while a bunch of progressives are out there saying, well, the Republican Party gonna die, somebody's planning on running right on down that path all the way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Because the forces that are propelling Trump are a substantial plurality of this country, and all you have to do is not shit on a few people, and the next thing you know, you've got a majority. Think about that. I know. It's talking about 2020, really? Well, yeah. Because he's out there. You don't necessarily know his name for sure, but he's out there. Maybe he's Tom Cotton from Arkansas, who looks like he swallowed a baby's head. Or maybe he's Ben Sasse from Nebraska. Demagogues through and through. Dangerous as hell. Tickles the fancies of aggrieved white people, you know, racists. And thanks to the orange stink bug, they've got a view all the way down the end of that trail. And it ends in a very, very happy place. So just a little something to ponder the next time you see, hear, read, whatever, some joyful, you know, I'm with her type declaring the end of the Republican Party. This could just be a new beginning. Because see, if the Republican Party as we know it goes away, which it won't, it's only going to be replaced by something worse. Compare it to what filled the vacuum after the Israelis neutered the PLO. Because, you know, they helped create Hezbollah. And guess what? It was worse than the PLO. See how it works? A white nationalist party with dreams of conquest and dominion. The truth, as they used to say on that television show, is out there. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Let's see. So, like I said, I had some interesting correspondence over the weekend. This one comes from Scott in Somerset, Kentucky, Stan. You don't realize it, Scott, but you've got a fellow member of the Horn Family Community Congregation not at all far away from you there. He and I mow grass on the weekends. Scott says, hi, Dennis. I'll try to keep this short, but hearing Friday on the front porch today, I feel it's important that I finally get this idea out of my head and hopefully get some feedback from the Horn family. Okay, you're being asked for feedback. Listen up. I caught your show several times way back years ago and somehow lost touch, but for the past year or so, I could very likely count the number of shows I've missed on one hand. I feel like I know you and many of the members personally and love you guys. I'll get to the point. This idea has been bouncing around in my head for several years, and I either need to do something with it or flush it completely. Ideally, if I could get a few people on board, I'd like to put together a team of like-minded individuals that could make this a reality. Americans have known for many years that our government has serious problems, and over these many years, a good number of U.S. citizens have simply given up. It is very likely that you've heard or even said, "What's the use? What can I do? Nothing's going to change anyway." Well, I think we've found a way to fight back, and your help is needed to make this simple idea a reality. The system, as we know it, works against us from every direction. I also feel confident that the evidence that our system of government has finally suffered a fatal injury lies in our current presidential election. Think about it for a minute. We've known for decades that politicians, for the most part, have very little interest in the day-to-day lives of Americans. The vast majority of our elected officials, particularly on the state and federal level, spend the bulk of their time trying to get reelected. We know that they spend big money in their efforts to do so, and that money primarily comes from those who have money to burn and need something in return. Why would my congressman be interested in my concerns if I can, at best, send him a few bucks and mention his name when the guys at work start talking politics? What he really needs is the big checks that can buy TV and radio ads, pay for the billboards and yard signs that need to go out all over his district. He needs money to run an effective campaign, and that kind of money comes from somewhere else, not from his constituents, and that somewhere else is always going to get his attention first. Ridiculous amounts of money are spent on these campaigns, and the numbers greatly increase as one steps higher up the ladder. During the 2012 election, $7 billion was spent by candidates, parties, and outside groups. Let that sink in for a minute. Most people can easily understand numbers like 100,000, 750,000, or even a million. But I really think that many of us have difficulty with the really big numbers. Think about it like this. A million is a lot of dollars. A billion is $1,000 million. And the amount of money spent on the 2012 election was $7,000 million. $7,000 million. It makes sense that Americans have given up on our political process. How can people that struggle to keep bills paid and the kids fed even try to compete in a game that's fueled with numbers that big? The answer is in big numbers. And the last thing our politicians want you to figure out is the numbers. At any given time, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 million people employed in the United States. So let's look at the numbers. If every employed American put 10 cents per day into a fund, it would cost each employee $3 per month. For less than the cost of a Big Mac per month, this fund would generate $5.4 billion in just one year. Numbers are fun when you think about how they can be used to make some real changes in our political system. I like to call it drop a dime on D.C. At some point, a much more creative name might take its place, but let's not lose sight of what I just said. $3 a month from only the employed Americans equals $5,400 million in just 1 year. $5,400 million, $5.4 billion in just 1 year. And that's not just the end of it, Scott says. There are millions of retired folks that could go contribute and millions that could and would contribute more than the $36 a year. You think that as we Americans would finally have voice, do you think that we as Americans would finally have a voice in our government if we had as much money as they do? I have no doubt that things would be completely different. The big question is, how would one implement such a plan? I think a group of people could polish this idea up and put it out on one of the crowdfunding platforms with the initial goal of raising enough money to build the infrastructure needed to manage such a project and begin to get it out over social media. As the money begins to come in, I could see radio and TV advertising and spokesmen being asked to appear on some of the 24-hour news networks. An equally important question is that of the platform or agenda. The general idea of this is unite all Americans left, right, and center to fight against the money and corruption in Washington, D.C. Finding something that would be palatable to as many Americans as possible won't be easy, but my thought is that we keep it simple, start with a couple of issues at most, raise the money and hammer Congress until they introduce and pass the legislation that the citizens demand. Upon an initial victory, the citizens of this country should no longer feel helpless and will be empowered to take on the next fight. Scott closes saying, I hope I didn't ramble. I've been at work all night and really should be sleeping. I appreciate what you do and want you to know that you do it very well. Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you very, very kindly. Scott in Somerset, Kentucky, Stan. It's an intriguing idea, isn't it? And the question, you know, it's the question of any fundraising endeavor. How do you get the largest number of people involved in your idea? But it's worth thinking about. Very much so. Thank you, Scott. Thank you very kindly. Darlene, longtime a supporter of this program, just jumped in and signed on for a $10 a month subscription. Thank you very kindly, Darlene. responding to, Jen corrected herself by the time she was done. Because of the Pence factor, if Trump just kind of folded his tents, Pence would be the nominee. Write in for Bernie. Steve in New York writes, a unicorn just farted. Meanwhile, David in South Carolina, Stan, says the Trump lead in South Carolina is less than 1% per Nate Silver today. That means, as David notes, the devil... And that is D-E-B-B-I-L, is within 1% of actually having a lead in South Carolina, Stan. Which is kind of astonishing. That's okay. That's okay. He's still way the hell out in front here in West Virginia. And since this is more Ann Monday, I probably... would do well to note that there's a reason. Oh, yeah, there's a reason. Let's see. According to an article by Simon Malloy over at Salon, there's a lot of baloney involved in the attempt to understand the Trump phenomenon. He writes, Trump's supporters generally have less education and are more likely to be blue-collar, but the standard economic measures of income and employment status show that, if anything, more affluent Americans favor Trump, even among white non-Hispanics. Surprisingly, there appears to be no link whatsoever between exposure to trade competition and support for nationalist policies in America as embodied by the Trump campaign. Huh? Instead, it appears, as he writes, well, if you live in a largely segregated, white, marginally educated community, you're probably going to have that Trump sign in your yard. I mean, I saw a couple today. One, probably not 4 miles from here. And I don't have to go, I don't even have to go that far to find my first one. But this one was interesting because it was on the way out to the highway, and I happened to notice it because not only was there a Trump sign on the white picket fence, but there was also a gray on white striped sign with the words Hillary for Prison 2016 displayed alongside it. If I was not 99.9% sure I'd be shot for doing it, I'd stop and peck on the door and say, excuse me, I couldn't help noticing your Hillary for Prison 2016 sign. Where's your Cheney for Prison sign? Where's your Bush for Prison sign? Where's your kind of sleazy Rice for Prison sign? Where's your Donald Rumfield for Prison sign? Where's your Scooter Libby back to prison sign? Huh? Because, see, remember, all these have to do with the, you know, Benghazi and emails and stuff. And so, given that, you know, they participated in starting a war of choice that led to the needless deaths of a million innocent non-combatant civilians, you'd think that there might be, you know, outside the peanut butter and Tempe sandwich in the back pocket crowd, the occasional Cheney for Prison sign. Because, see, and it kind of blew Ferg's mind, he saw a statistic that ninth graders entering their first day of high school this year are a group of people for whom September 11th, 2001 is something that happened before they were born. Ferg went, oh, Dad, is this what it feels like to get old? Not yet, boy, not yet, but no, you're... But, you know, among the adults, we remember September 11th, and we remember the phony, phonied-up, faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, ginned-up, dummied-up drive into a war crime, a crime against humanity, to wit, Iraq, that the Bush administration perpetrated because Saddam tried to kill my daddy. Yeah, yeah. Which takes us to really a Jim Dandy. I mean, this was a restaurant quality, top shelf, 200 proof, Moran Monday nominee. And I think she's had a nomination or two on Moran Monday in the past, but. This is that old Milwaukee ad. It just don't get no better than this. Which, you know, given that it was old Milwaukee beer that was being advertised, is proof that there are no truth in advertising laws in this country whatsoever. Katrina Pearson. Is the national spokes dummy for the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini campaign. And last week, in the midst of all of the business about who founded ISIS and who was a co-founder and yada, yada, yada. One of those people who just eats meth on cornflakes and books people for CNN or whatever called up and said wanted to get Katrina Pearson on. Speaking of Afghanistan and the Iraq War, Katrina Pearson said, "Remember, we weren't even in Afghanistan by this time. Barack Obama went into Afghanistan, creating another problem." That was Obama's war. Whoop! I mean, I'm not going to subject you to the clip. Because there's so much stupid in it, it may just make your brains run out your ears. I mean, this is... Wow. Katrina Pearson actually said that Barack Obama ordered the attack and invasion of Afghanistan. You know, in 2001, like October 2001 was when the bombing started in Afghanistan. And you see something like that, and you just, you have to go back and roll over it again. Just to make sure that, no, that did not say high tech. That did not say hot trash. That said high tech. And she doubled down on it. I mean, if facts mean nothing. Facts mean nothing to stupid, to morons. It's... In any other time but this, it would be breathtaking in its stupidity. Now, though, yeah. I mean, Katrina Pearson said that Barack Obama was responsible for the death of Captain Humayun Khan in Iraq. You know, when he was still a senator. Yeah, oh well, yeah, I will subject you to it. Why not? Because I'm not doing it justice.
Good morning.
So Donald Trump says, you heard there, the only way he loses Pennsylvania is if there is cheating. Now, I've had two other Trump supporters on. I think you know them well, Amy Kremer and Scotty Nell Hughes. And neither was able to decisively say whether he was being sarcastic with that comment or if he was being sincere. Which is it?
Well, I think, you know, he was at a rally again talking to his supporters, and he meant it. He was feeling like, you know, there has been voter fraud in the past. There have been election board members in Pennsylvania that have been arrested. And just on Monday, and we haven't really seen this reported yet, but ABC reported that there is a potential problem with electronic voting machines, and they cited a document released by the Brennan Justice Center, and there could be a problem there.
So Donald Trump was sincere in this.
Wait, I'm sorry. This isn't the part that we were going after, but I love that. We've known about the problems with video game voting machines for how long? You, me, us, we, progressive peoples, liberals, decent human beings, people with brains instead of just thin gray settlings floating around between their ears. Right. Vote flipping, all manner of goofy hackability. I mean, this goes back to the early aughts and Brad Friedman's original groundbreaking work with Clint Curtis. But the Republicans have suddenly discovered it. The Trumpanzees have suddenly discovered it. Yeah. Because maybe this time it'll be their ox getting gored. Well, in the case of Trump, their ass getting gored, but I digress. Yeah. Never mind Florida in 2000, never mind Ohio in 2004. Yeah, now they're concerned. Dumbasses.
Statement that the only way they can beat him is if Democrats cheat.
Well, he did say, I feel. So this was a moment where some of these reports had come out.
But he also said...
Yeah, I feel. Which is another way of saying, I believe. Skip a bit, brother.
Yesterday, and his sarcasm. Watch.
So I said, the founder of ICE, obviously I'm being sarcastic, then, but not that sarcastic, to be honest with you.
Sarcastic, but not that sarcastic. Again, which is it? Was he being sarcastic or not being sarcastic?
Well, I guess it depends on the interpreter. Of course it was sarcasm, because he obviously didn't mean that.
No, it doesn't depend on the interpreter. Sarcasm is not in the eye of the beholder. Sarcasm is strictly a matter of intent for the person doing the sarcasting. There's another one of those words I make up. Again, with the feelings. Whoa, feelings.
Or Hillary Clinton founded ISIS in the literal sense. In other words, they didn't file the paperwork of incorporation. But he does mean that their policies, and if you play out that entire...
Ha? What? ISIS has articles of incorporation? Are they in Delaware or South Dakota? Stop it.
Discussion, he talks about those policies that absolutely gave rise to the formation of ISIS. I mean, this is something that General Flynn had reported that in August 2012, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton ignored the DIA report, which told them, if you arm the resistance, you will feed ISIS, and an Islamic State was formed. He said this wasn't a blind eye. This was willful ignoring of the intelligence.
But you know that ISIS actually started in 2004 with AQI, Al-Qaeda, in Iraq, and then morphed into, in 2006, Islamic State in Iraq. So this is not something that started during the Obama administration. There is an argument to be made, and I think in these conversations on television, many people have said that there is a path there for Donald Trump, but he's saying that he was sarcastic, but not that sarcastic, about something that happened in 2004.
Well, if you're moving into, if you want to go way back, we can look at the troop surge. And after 2007, Al-Qaeda was essentially in ashes. It was Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton who then destroyed the entire rollout by wanting to pull out early, announcing their plans, ignoring intelligence. And that is the reason why ISIS is a global issue.
Barack Obama in 2004, that we said?
No, I said afterwards. After the surge.
Mm-hmm.
When Al-Qaeda was in ashes, entering Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Remember, we weren't even in Afghanistan by this time. Barack Obama went into Afghanistan, creating another problem. It was Hillary Clinton and her in Libya, which was also a reckless decision to create that vacuum.
No, okay, so that's like the 17th time I've heard it. And every time I'm like, she didn't. But she did. She did. We weren't even in Afghanistan, and Barack Obama went into Afghanistan. And And once again, just as so often we say, don't say, pay attention to what the guy's saying. Listen to the people in the audience clapping. There's a certain segment of the American population who are, you know, going to vote for that guy. We're going, oh, hell yeah, I know. Hey, it's because he's a Kenyan Muslim. That's why he invaded Afghanistan. Yeah, see, Donald Rumsfeld said there wasn't anything worth blowing up there, so that's why we didn't. Yeah. A Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, invaded Afghanistan when everybody knows it's a graveyard of empires. Yes, this coming from courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. Regarding the ISIS Articles of Incorporation, as the great prophet Bishop Willard Romney once proclaimed, ISIS are people too, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend. But I mean, it's... And poor Victor Blackwell over at CNN... I'm on listen number 17 here, and that was the first time for him, and he said, "Hi, whoa." And the producer in his IFB in his ear is going, "No, she did say that. She really did. We heard it too." Yeah, Jeremy in Vermont says, "Bob, I kind of feel like I'm in the midst of a stroke listening to this lady. Just what?" ISIS Incorporated, just the same, more murder incorporated, and the poor guy is having to fight back against the conniption that every fiber of him, his being, wants to have.
They armed the rebels, and they're even funding them now.
Okay, so you're saying Barack Obama took the country into Afghanistan post 2009? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is.
Because you just said that we weren't in Afghanistan.
Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. That was Obama's war, yes.
Okay,
Katrina, Mr. Trump is saying
we gotta
that the policies
quick...
of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton,
okay.
Ignoring intelligence,
yeah.
Created the hotbed
yes.
for global terrorists uh-huh. to travel the world
right.
under the name of ISIS.
All right, Katrina, thank you. Stay with us. We've got more questions.
I'll bet you do. That's way up there. I mean, that's... We may have to put Katrina Pearson on Moore and Rushmore. And it's a pretty rare bunch up there. I mean, dim leaders there. But she just keeps getting, you know, better. Or worse, depending on how you describe it. So today, because people are drawn to her as if she is she's the light bulb and they're the moth. The for-profit media are. They're like, yeah, book her again. She may say something even more stupid. We'll make history. Never understanding, of course, that the purpose of the for-profit media are not necessarily is not necessarily to try to, you know, climb the pinnacle of Mount Dumbass. No. But so they, well, they gave her a call from over to the Fox Business Network. And where reality was turned 180 degrees, you know, on itself.
It is no secret that the media definitely skews left. However, I think this cycle many people will agree that it's above and beyond, over the top, when it comes to Mr. Trump and his campaign. And I think that's Mr. Trump's way of fighting back. You know, the last two presidential cycles, we had Republican candidates that just sat there and took a beating, and Mr. Trump isn't going to do that. And therefore, the voters want someone that's going to fight back, because they are tired of seeing left-wing reporters literally beat Trump supporters into submission, into supporting policies they don't agree with. It just shuts them down, and that's not what they're seeing in this campaign. So this is essentially Mr. Trump fighting back and making sure that his side of the story gets
told. You caught that. That tired of seeing left-wing reporters literally beat Trump supporters into submission. Because it's all that one clip, you know, the one clip of Amy Goodman from Democracy Now. With a Louisville slugger just standing over the prone body of a Trumpanzee, cackling and laughing as she has beaten the Trump supporter literally into submission. Well, it's not all over the internet, because it never happened. You know, David Sirota with the tire iron in his hand, and the little hillbilly lady with the Make America Great Again hat, cowering in fear on her knees as he says, accept policies that you don't agree with. Yes. Left-wing reporters. Yeah. Chris Hedges with his taser, you know, holding it right there against Bubba's pacemaker there at the Trump rally, screaming at him, "I'll use this. I'm not afraid to use this. I'll light that pacemaker right up. And if that doesn't work, I've got a microwave in the van, dummy. Accept policies that you don't want." Morons. Lots and lots of morons. Meanwhile, where election fraud is concerned, not voter fraud, election fraud, Ron in Raleigh notes, subject line, never mind. Hey, Bob, never mind the consent decree against the GOP from 1982 for election fraud, because that's a thing. Oh, and in New York, Steve said, under the subject line, Obama's war. Bush knew Obama was going to be elected in 2008, which is why Bush started Obama's war, just as Obama's mother knew he was going to be elected in 2008 and forged his birth certificate. It all makes perfect sense. What's the problem? Exactly. Some of us are having an easier time of it than others, thinking that, well, you know, Hillary's just got this in the bag now. She's got it all sewn up. I'm not comfortable. There's still plenty of time and plenty of room for her to screw this up. Todd writes, and this is a different Todd. This isn't Todd down in South Carolina stand that we talk barbecue with. Subject line, Trump can win within this discounted time. I use the term discounted in the intransitive sense, meaning something worth less than the current contrasted to the past. I feel that our kids don't have the wealth potential we had 20 or 30 years ago. We spend 10 times more to formally educate our children, but receive 1/10 of the education economic outcome model. What's the constant dollar ratio of Ivy League education to
than that of a free community college 30 years ago. Or Trump University versus the $300 Carlton Sheets TV infomercial my roommate and I purchased in our dorm after a six-pack and a few bong hits as freshmen in 1983 Chicago. Hey, it worked. We bought several three flats in that once wasteland of North Chicago, now called Wrigleyville, with FHA financing, each around $150K with $5K down and a lot of sweat equity. Used the basement as a fourth owner-occupied unit to qualify as non-commercial homeowner mortgages. Cash flow was slightly positive and very positive after we mastered tax accounting interest and depreciation, but we did fun things with expenses, too. We as kids could have taught the Clinton Foundation a trick or two. I sold them in 1987 before I graduated for a net post-tax of $600K. I subsequently lost half of that in the equities crash of October 20th, 1987. I remember that day. But I learned an important lesson from Alan Greenspan. He put a floor on losses, and the system will never let real money lose. Call that the Greenspan put, reiterated by Ben Helicopter Money Bernanke during the Great Recession and now under near-zero interest policy under Janet Yellen's Fed, as well as all the Western Central Banks and the BOJ. In the 1980s, kids without Roman numerals behind their names could never play in that sandbox of algorithmic wealth extraction. Nor can geeky kids with Heath kits in the 1970s learn coding as a hobby, turn that into an industry in the 1990s. Today's IT entrepreneurs are not alchemists. They are con men that in Silicon Valley investor vernacular are called the unicorns. This is no longer Schumpeter's creative destruction. It's simply net-net destructive replacement. The gig economy, see Uber. Advertising models, Google and Facebook. The scale fallacy, Amazon, a Walmart model, transferring sales tax and local jobs for the illusion of convenience and price. The primacy of past and current intellectual property at the expense of true innovation, entertainment, pharmaceutical, engineered foodstuffs. Expansion of the military, intelligence, security, surveillance complex, military intelligence, security, surveillance complex, our last industry of mastery. Today's desk jockey coder with her six-figure student debt is economically no different than that 1980s high school dropout in the holler going into the coal mine. The former, hoping for that not-going-to-happen IPO that could make her a paper millionaire for just coding 25 hours a day, living in a cargo can in San Francisco with a dozen others for rent that exceeds mortgage payments in most housing markets. And the latter, hoping not to be an actuarial operant in an industrial risk management model, but the company store might find meth or oxy in our guy and hurt his family's denied survivor benefits, or he works out this 20 or 30 deal and the company BKs and legally able to vitiate or recast pensions liability to pennies on the dollar. Trump plays on this reality, so did Bernie. The greatest denial in the race is not seeing the parallels. We call his supporters Trumpansies. We only see their racism, xenophobia, ignorance, name the affliction, but we don't see them as neoliberal economic refugees with common cause. And that's the tragedy. Bernie won the independents. The Democratic primary provided no price discovery. What I think will happen will be the Bradley effect. Rick can tell you it's a California thing. I think Trump will do better than the current polling suggests. I hope I'm wrong. Signed, Todd. I hope you're wrong, too. I hope I'm wrong, you know, because I'm on record. I said I fully expect Hillary Clinton to lose this election, and I have not given up the possibility of that existing, or of that transpiring, I should say. Because this is America, and we're not very good at elections. You know, we've witnessed the steaming orange pile of shit, dog whistling to his adherents, the Second Amendment remark, the beat the crap out of them, I'll pay your legal fees. That wasn't really so much dog whistle as straight up. But here's something to ponder. Is it possible that the voter fraud election fraud comments in Pennsylvania was another dog whistle. You know, a message to his hardcores to go and do whatever they can to mess with the election. You know, in another statement, he said, I don't think we're going to have to even get out the vote. I don't think we've got to. I think people are just going to be so excited they're going to go and vote for Trump. Huh? Now, Todd says we see only their racism, xenophobia, ignorance, name the affliction, but we don't see them as the neoliberal economic refugees with common cause. Oh, here's the funny thing. There's a whole bunch of Trumpanzees who aren't walking around in trucker hats and take my wife, please, t-shirts or what have you. There's a whole bunch of Trumpanzees who have nice retirements. They're that portion of the boomer generation for whom the American economy worked. The last ones, as a matter of fact. Who have a dignified retirement. Who are okay in their old age. Who aren't refugees in any sense of the word. But are deeply aggrieved within the framework of their privilege. Nobody's doing anything to them. Their property values are fine. The retirement checks come month after month. They go, they travel, they do, they see. But he has made it okay for them to bring out into the light all their hatreds, all their fears, all their bigotry. Yeah, is that to say that there aren't some people who have been burned by neoliberal economic policies? Absolutely. But many of his supporters, they're not suffering. They're not going home and eating beans and rice day in and day out, morning, noon, and night. They've got very comfortable Merkin lives. And as I think was noted on this program, they happen to see the world as a zero-sum game. So that if somebody else participates in the American dream, such as it is or was, they're convinced that somehow that means they're losing something. It has not always been this way. There was once in this country a notion that if we prospered together, the country would be better for it. But my God, there's something on the order of 40 to 50 years of Republican preachments to the contrary. Think back to the auto bailout and the viciousness with which people responded to the idea that someone working for an auto parts manufacturer would actually have a living wage. Look at the way Hillary's supporters, if you saw them on Facebook, look at the disdain that they manifested for the idea of a $15 an hour minimum wage. Ah, 12's enough. You know, 7 years from now. And hardly ever a mention that the reason we need a $20 minimum wage is because that's what it was in 1960 when this country was experiencing prosperity probably like no other time. Taking into account, of course, the people who were denied that prosperity. 20 bucks an hour. Well, you know, I mean, if you consider women in the workplace, so you cut that in half, and because I mean, if both sides of a couple are working, and the man and the woman, whatever, then $10 an hour for each of them is the same as one of them earning 20. Ooh, economic miracles! See how it works. Yeah. So here we are at the end of the filibobster and a little bit over, 6 minutes past the hour, 6 minutes past 7 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And I'll open up the phone lines are open. I mean, it's not like I mean, they're there. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. That, of course, is the stress line. Not for people under stress, but because it's named after Bill Mr. Stress Miller. So 304-663-HORN, 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet if you feel so inclined. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. So, chime in if you wish. Bring your own nominations to the table. I've got a nomination here from our buddy Ray in Florida. My Moron Monday nominee is in a category all his own when it comes to incompetent losers. What's very dangerous here is where he's employed now. Darnell Early was the Flint emergency manager who more than anyone else was responsible for the incredible fuck-up that is still poisoning men, women, and children. But wait, this is the Bronco part. But wait, there's more. Michigan's beloved Repiglickin' governor couldn't let baffled boner boy go without work, so Early was made emergency manager of the Detroit public school system. A year after this award-winning asshole took over the schools, the school buildings are still rat and roach infested. The emergency doors are chained shut. The roofs leak. Ceiling tiles and asbestos are falling on the kids. Many bathrooms don't work, and far more dangerous, the old failing boiler system is being maintained by idiots that don't have a clue about running boilers. This is a very dangerous recipe for disaster and tragedy. The corruption and incompetence needed for such an epic failure of government is incredible and obscene. To add insult to injury, we know all of this would never for one second be tolerated in a mostly white school system. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a reason that it isn't a mostly white school system. Because the mostly whites have made sure that their children don't go to school in them. Meanwhile, in regard to Katrina Pearson and Obama's war that he started, you know, in Afghanistan. Clarence writes, Bob, this means the bombing of Afghanistan did not start on Bush's watch. Katrina started the rewriting of history. What about the hunt for bin Laden in the mountains of Tora Bora? The U.S. was fighting while Obama was still in the state assembly in Illinois. Exactly. We do try to raise $200 every evening. Thank you again to Darlene for becoming a new $10 a month subscriber. That means we've only got $190 to go in fundraising on the evening. And at the middle of the month, we've got lots of first of the month bills to pay. So hopefully 19 at 10, 10 at 19, 1 at 190. You know the math. You do it better than I do. So, yeah, let's take a little break and see if there's anything on your mind, or else I'll just, you know, I'll just sort of keep, you know, filibustering. We can do that too. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. The hour on this Moran Monday, the 15th day of August, 2016. I'm sorry. That song just seemed appropriate at the time. Let's see. Let's run over to the phones to see what's shaking here. Hey, welcome aboard. Hello. I can hear you. Hello. Okay, so you gave up. All right. Well, that's okay. Maybe we'll try back. Somebody down in Middle Tennistan. Now, there is There are more ands, and there are, you know, more ands. And in light of the fact that this guy, that Rudy Giuliani became known as noun verb 9/11, this is surprising and not at all surprising. But this is my lead nominee. I mean, we may have to put Katrina Pearson on Mount Rushmore, Mount Moore and Moore. Mount Rushmore and, need a little help here. But when she gets there, there will be a hand reaching down to lift her up, and that hand will be attached to Rudy Giuliani. Because, yeah, there's more Ann, and then there's GoPro. The late, great Hunter S. Thompson once said, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. And this is that. Because you just, you know, you can't. Now, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini made a big speech today. They're all big speeches. They're beautiful speeches. They're huge speeches. And it was supposed to be on national security. And, I mean, this is, it's Rudy Giuliani, noun verb 9/11. So, Rudy was introducing T-Rump today. And he was talking about how about the awesomeness that is Mike Pence when he said,
Mike Pence understands this from his time both on the Foreign Affairs Committee, from his very, very timely visit, which I remember, to Ground Zero when we were in desperate need of help. He was there. And from his work on Judiciary Committee and helping to fashion the Patriot Act. By the way, under those 8 years, before Obama came along, we didn't have any successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States.
Damn. Fresca all over the place now. You heard that, right? I mean, that wasn't me doing my Rudy Giuliani impression. He said that.
Have any successful...
No, let's get it all. Let's get it all.
Any successful...
More. I got to get the whole stupid.
Under those 8 years... Before Obama came along, we didn't have any successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States. They all started when Clinton and Obama got into office.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It works for Katrina Pearson. Why shouldn't it work for him? Now, see, there's gonna be some sad blowback to this, because I imagine somewhere out in parts of the internet that I don't like to visit, there are already headlines, breathless, you know, Zom, whatever. Rudy Giuliani admits 9/11 was an inside job. Under those 8 years before Obama came along, which would be 2000 to 2008, We didn't have any successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States. They all started when Clinton Obama got in office. Man. And notice the black guy doesn't even get first billing there when Clinton and Obama got into office. That makes it sound like she was elected president and he was Secretary of State. What about Building 7? Dear God. This is the kind of stuff that makes Moran Monday a little bit difficult sometimes. As noted in an email that just landed, courtesy of Marty, just like Jebya saying his brother kept America safe while he was in the White House. If they've got to wave a bloody shirt like, we need to start a war in Iraq because it didn't have anything to do with 9/11, but we need to start a war in Iraq. They can remember that 9/11 happened on my watch, and I will never forget it because the saddest day of my entire presidency was when that one black feller said, Bush don't like black people. Kanye West, right? It was the saddest day of my presidency. Saddest day of my life. Those 8 years, we never had a successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States. I guess that means the 19 people aboard those planes were Baptists. Hey, Scott, out in San Diego, get punky. Come on out on the ledge.
Bob?
Yeah, hi, Scott.
What is the name of that guy who, maybe he's not on TV anymore, but he used to be on TV, that he would answer questions from people in the audience for departed friends and relatives?
Oh, what was his name? Somebody in the chat room will know it. Yes. Your loved one, his name began with an A. B, C? Was it C? No, D?
I either need to fire up my crystal crock pot and stare into it intently to see if I can commune with the departed, or hire this guy, because my friend who was on American Airlines Flight 77 on September 11th, 2001, along with the school children he was bringing out to California for a nature field trip, I need to play that Giuliani clip for him and those kids and see if they agree that during the 8 years preceding Obama's arrival, that we had no successful Islamic terrorists.
Radical Islamic. So these were the 19 hijackers were like sort of, I don't know, maybe they were like mild-mannered Sufis or something.
Jesus.
We didn't have any successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States under those 8 years before Obama came along. Honest to God, Scott, we gotta have some rules here. I think, you know, this was a live event, okay? And I think it's okay. We need some sort of legal defense in the statutory mechanism where when Rudy Giuliani says snippet of untrammeled bullshit like that, it's okay if every reporter in the room takes one shoe off and throws it at him. I'm open to tomatoes too, but
yeah, but why waste
hard little bastards that come up green from Florida? They can hurt you. Shoe's just gonna flap, and you know,
those supermarket tomatoes. And see, the thing is, he was speaking at a Trump event, right?
Oh, it wasn't just an event. It was a major, huge foreign policy speech.
All right. Well, the people who support Trump, who think he is the grandest thing to hit electoral politics since who knows who, they, let's just put it this way, their filter in terms of reality and actual history and real-life events in history, their filter is either broken or non-existent, because that bullshit from Giuliani, just as the truckloads of bullshit from Trump, will pass unnoticed, fully believed and embraced. And this is who we're dealing with. See, this, I don't agree with you about the possibility of Hillary losing in November, except to say that the electorate out there is factually challenged, and it's because of people like Trump, obviously, and Giuliani, and all of Trump's other minions and hand puppets. It just staggers me to think that not only would he say something like that, but that there are people who buy into that bullshit, just gobble it right up like it's strawberry shortcake. It's just amazing. Except that it isn't, I guess.
Well, this is where the disconnect happens, Scott. I don't know what to make of this, because I don't know if Emery and Marvelline are sitting there going, "Yep, I remember that day, don't you, Marvelline? We's sitting here watching Good Morning America, and the next thing you know, the Twin Towers is coming down, and there was that Barack Obama. You know, he's a Kenyan Muslim. They faked his birth certificate." Is that really happening in millions of homes around the United States of America, Scott?
Well, yeah, I'm sure that there are some people who were too stunned to say even that. And nobody knew during the first hour. I looked at some of those tapes not long ago, and it took about a good hour, maybe 90 minutes, before somebody, some intelligence person, came up with the supposition that, not Saddam Hussein, but the guy that they stormed in and killed in Pakistan.
Bin Laden?
Bin Laden, Jesus. It's so hot here, I can hardly think. But, you know, it was a good hour to 90 minutes before they started connecting dots and publicly saying that it was Bin Laden and his group who were likely behind it. Okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure that there were people out there in TV land looking at this, not knowing what to think, and since nature abhors a vacuum.
Well, but it was 2001, and nobody knew who Barack Obama was. Damn it.
Not on a national level, no. That was, what, 3 years before
he was sitting in the Illinois State Senate.
Yeah.
Saying things like, we had to have universal single-payer health care.
And a couple of years ago, didn't Cheney say something along those lines that during the Bush-Cheney regime, there were no terrorist attacks on the U.S.?
Yeah, and as noted, Jebbia picked it up and ran with it. And the Republicans did this constantly during the reign of error. He, especially during the 2004 campaign, he kept us safe. Well, except for the 3,000 dead people he didn't.
Exactly.
So, I
don't know. Maybe there is something to your projection or forecast about Hillary losing. But if the people are that dumb, they would put Trump into office.
Well, you know, you kind of wish that whoever was running Hillary's Twitter account would just respond to Rudy and say, you know, at noun verb 9/11 Rudy, shut the up, just go away.
Well, here's
the next question: the people who were the victims of September 11th, 2001. Whether at the Pentagon or Shanksville, Pennsylvania, or New York City, Does this piss them off?
Well, I don't know how it wouldn't. I mean, anybody paying a half a bit of attention should hear that and say, what the hell?
Because, I mean, beyond what the hell, I ain't got much left.
No, me neither. And this is, for me to be at a loss for words and for you to be at a loss for words, that's saying something. That is astounding insanity on the part of anybody who would say anything.
I mean,
like
just for the hell of it, one more time, okay? Stand by.
All right.
Judiciary Committee and helping to fashion the Patriot Act. By the way, under those 8 years, before Obama came along, we didn't have any successful radical Islamic terrorist attack in the United States. They all started when Clinton and Obama got into office.
Did you hear the one idiot start to clap?
Well, maybe he thought it was sarcasm. See, here's the thing, Bob. Let's say your forecast is accurate and the worst comes to pass in November. I've been wondering ever since 2004, when it was W up against John Kerry, and everybody was very hopeful that America had seen the light, and as bad as Kerry could have ever been, that maybe 4 years of W were enough. And then in the wake of that, and we all know about the shenanigans with the machines in Ohio and dirty tricks in other places that allowed Bush to win, supposedly, in 04. I kept wondering, what is going to be the tipping point? What is going to be enough for the people, the right-thinking people in this country, to look honestly at the situation and say, at long last, enough? And I hope it doesn't come to pass in November that Trump wins. I don't see how he can, personally. You know, but everybody's crystal crockpot is different. The settings are never the same. But even then, will that be enough? Or by that time, will it be too late? I guess that's the big question.
Well, okay, so ancillary to that, Scott, is how do we define right-thinking people in America? I'm a little troubled by right thinking insofar as that passes a judgment. How about we replace that with the thinking at all people in America?
Well, the people whose thoughts and actions and opinions are based in a reality based scenario, because it's obvious that Trump and his minions are not dealing in a world that anybody recognizes or can claim to be reality. I mean, it might be real according to the voices in their otherwise empty heads, but it doesn't reflect any reality or reality-based reality that I'm aware of. And if it's true that they hold the power, enough power electorally to prevail in November, then it's already too late.
There's a stunned silence there in that clip, and you've got the one lone person who goes, and even that person's like, wait a minute. Now, if he had said that to, say, a National Guard armory full of people who thought they were going to wrestling, he would have gotten a standing ovation. So, I mean, at some point, I was thinking about this over the weekend. Because you know, there are not enough jobs to go around that people will just throw away a good one. But you wonder, where is that committed practitioner of journalism? Where is that that diehard defender of the Fourth Estate, who will who would, in an interview with, say, you know, Trump, look at him and after he says something incredibly stupid and just look at him and say, "Is this for real? You've got the vocabulary of a third grader. It's been measured. Are you doing that on purpose, or is that really the vocabulary you've got? Sir, tell America, are you a fucking idiot?" And of course, that person would immediately be fired and have to go off into some sort of exile and probably, you know, hang out with Dan Rather somewhere. But the controversy after Katrina Pearson, Scott, after she said what she said, and people tried to help her, people in the supposedly objective, non-biased, for-profit media tried to help her, or when Hugh Hewitt tried to help Trump, say, "Oh, what you mean is they lost the peace?" No, I meant they were the founders of ISIS. We got it. That's the polar opposite of that. They say something stupid, and you try to help them help, and the for-profit media tries to help unstupid them. Well, where then is the person who will simply look up and go, "You're an idiot"? I mean, does that person exist, Scott?
Well, in the corporate media, probably not, because as you say, jobs, even today, are hard to come by in that sphere of influence. It makes me wish we had somebody like Edward R. Murrow still around.
Well, I mean, and that's who I was thinking of, or, you know, that day when and you know, Nixon had a Henry, I think Walter Cronkite's a commie. When Walter Cronkite declared that Vietnam was lost. You know, it was just a little moment of truth telling, and these so-called video journalists, and even the editorial boards of real live dead tree newspapers, who sit down with it. At some point in time, does some member of the Fourth Estate, Scott? And I'm not being a smartass about this. I'm asking this as a serious question. About America's body politic, about our commitment to a free press. At some point in time, does someone not have an obligation to look at Trump and say, "I'm sorry, sir, I've heard this for a lot of months now, and I think we just have to come to the conclusion that you are a moneyed idiot. You're a dolt. You're a dumbass. Get out of my studio. Get up. Leave. Why are you still sitting there, you fuckwit? Get up and go. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. I'll call security. I don't care if you're the Republican nominee. Get out. Stop breathing the same air I'm breathing, you fool."
Well, it's possible that somebody would do that, but up till now, no one has.
Do you think it's possible? I mean, can you see George Snuffleupagus doing it?
Well, I don't
know. Can you see Joke Toad doing it?
No, not the two of them. But certainly someone of some stature and with a pretty big media platform could do it. But you've got to also look at why it hasn't happened in over a year now, that Trump has been permitted, even encouraged, even underwritten, to get where he has gotten to. And that is, The corporate media needs the horse race. They need the intrigue.
They need the welfare, Scott.
Well, yeah, there is that, okay? But now, when we're getting down to the short rows, so to speak, you know, now they're not quite as effusive in their praise. They'll still cover Trump, but they're not... They're commenting, but it's like...
You know when they're going to turn on him, Scott? When they realize how little money the RNC is spending on his presidential campaign.
Well, and I heard the other day that they're looking at October, which is, to my way of thinking, a little late, don't you think? Because by October, the cake is already three quarters baked. Okay, but Reince Priebus has been making these pronouncements, and the word on the street is that by October, the GOP, the National Party, will begin to plug money into the down ballot races. But by then, I mean, when you leave a burning building, when you flee a sinking ship, you don't wait until the water or the flames are licking at your toes. You know? And I don't know. I think in their heart of hearts, they know that it's too late, that not only are they going to lose the presidency in November, but there's a better than even chance they're going to lose the Senate. And the House is not going to be as red in 2017 as it is today. And high time, in my estimation. Not that that'll get anything done, but...
Well, that's why I said what I said at the beginning of the program, Scott. I fear that, you know, look, if we use American history as an example, it took several attempts to cross the Allegheny front before the Scots-Irish started being able to settle in what is now West Virginia. It was not responded to well at all by the people who were already living here. But somebody went and blazed that trail. This is actually family history. One of my ancestors, he went, he blazed the trail, he turned around, and he went back. Because it was just, but then he came back again. And he came back again, and he brought the wife and the kid with him. And they stayed. And so even though he made mistakes the first time through, by the time he came and stayed, he understood the trail. Well, now, there's not going to be a second time through for the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. He's a stalking horse. I mean, it just dawned on me this weekend, Scott. He's a stalking horse. He is how the Republican Party is reinventing itself. And it's going to be meaner than you ever thought the Republican Party could be. It's going to be more white nationalist. It's going to be more fascist. And the next time, there'll be a smart guy at the head. And the people that he gets to pick up the pitchforks and torches are going to be just as mean, just as ignorant, just as ill-informed. But they're going to be orderly.
But wait, haven't you just described the textbook definition of insanity, doing the same thing repeatedly, expecting a different
result? No, this is not going to be doing the same thing, because the next time through, it's not going to be a godforsaken third-grade vocabulary idiot like Donald Trump. The next time, they're playing for keeps. Like I said, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, Tom Cotton of Arkansas. That skinny little freak has been telling himself he's presidential since he put on long pants. He's already campaigning. Because you know what? You don't if you're the junior senator from Arkansas, you don't just wander over to a Rotary meeting in Charleston, South Carolina. Or some such place. You don't suddenly feel the urge for a lobster roll in Manchester, New Hampshire in 2016.
No, I mean they would be very foolish not to avail themselves of any opportunity that Trump presents to them. And it makes perfect sense, except for the part about if he loses as spectacularly as I expect that he will, he obviously is a flawed candidate. But a lot of his voters buy into every last bit of his rhetoric and his pronouncements, politically speaking. Okay,
I mean, you and I have kind of gone round and round on this, Scott. you say loses spectacularly. I don't see how you lose spectacularly when you carry 28 states. There's no way you can characterize that as a spectacular loss. The only thing that characterizes as is a Confederate loss. And that's the other part of this of the other piece of this little nasty little orange jigsaw puzzle. I've reached the conclusion that this country has all, you know, I've used the phrase for a long time, Cold Civil War. Well, I've reached the conclusion that this country has long since had a secession of sorts. The rest of the country tries to you know, keep things going, and we support the Confederacy because the Confederate states take in a lot more federal money than they ever pay out. And so, you know, every 4 years they vote for their white supremacist Republican candidate for president, and they get overridden by the rest of the country, and their sense of aggrievement grows and grows and grows. But one of these days, they'll get them one. They got them one. There had to be some substantial cheating going on, but in 2000, you know.
So you think it'll be something other than a squeaker in Trump's favor come November?
I don't think it's going to be a squeaker, but I don't think it's going to be a spectacular loss as you describe it. Because you win 26 states, there's nothing spectacular in the loss. It's just, you know, the 26 states of this country voted for white national fascism.
Well, given the fact that it all hinges upon the electoral vote, these states that you're describing, 26 states, they are not what you would call, well, first of all, they're not battleground states. You know, the 8 or 10 or 12 states.
No, they're blood red.
Yeah, okay. See, there's no, you know, his 26 states, let's say, versus Hillary's 24, it's an apple and oranges comparison in terms of the electoral vote impact. Well, I mean, would you at least concede that?
I don't know. I mean,
I'm watching this very carefully. The last 3 months are always exciting for me as an election watcher because I don't check every day, but at least once or twice a week, I'll check the electoral vote picture, because ultimately that's the one that's going to count come November. And it has become, since the end of the GOP convention in Cleveland, each week has been a new, it's like a staircase with downward steps incrementally week after week in the wake of the GOP convention for one Donald J. Trump. And the map does not seem to be reflecting him doing well, either by a squeaker or even a fairly substantial margin in electoral votes come November. That, I guess, is my main contention here. And I could be wrong. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong information and that there's something...
Well, I mean, I'm looking at the nowcast now, and 21 states, 22.
Okay.
But that's, you know, that's Jesus land. Maybe 23. I mean, Arizona and Georgia are very, very, very faint blue. Chance of winning as of today, 90.6% Hillary, 9.4% Trump. In the chat room, Barkway just told me... where is it here? Hold on. Something about Bob, calm down. Remember, the Electoral College elects the president, not the people, and according to an NBC article today, Hillary has surged past 270 electoral votes already. Oh, the election has not been held. The Electoral College is determined by the Electoral College vote is determined by the way the state votes. It's not like the Electoral College just to go in and do its own thing. So if the Electoral College, if the state of Alabama votes for Trump, it's all of its electoral votes are going to go to Trump.
Yeah.
If West Virginia votes for Trump, which I expect them to do, then our five crummy little Electoral College votes will go for Trump. I'm sorry. I'm watching. This is a Hillary Clinton campaign, and it is still a campaign on training wheels. I maintain absolutely and will not back off of it that she would be losing to any other Republican nominee with the possible exception of Mike Huckabee or Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
She'd be 10 points down to Marco Rubio. She'd be 15 points down to Kasich. She'd probably be 2, 3, 4, 5 points down to Jebbia.
So having Trump as an opponent, based on that, seems to work in Hillary's favor.
Yes, it absolutely does. He's the only opponent she could beat.
I'm amazed that he's doing as well as he has done. I mean, he's not doing as well now. But, well,
he got the nomination because he was able to be a bully in that process because there was a room full of people. There was a stage full of people.
And the media
were complicit. But look, October, this feels like Game of Thrones. October is coming. The email stuff won't go away. Like I said, it wasn't just that dude had a Trump sign on his white picket fence. It was the Hillary for prison 2016.
But Jesus Land is always going to do what Jesus Land always does. I look at the ground game that is non-existent in the case of Trump, and I look at the fact that he's being outspent in terms of ads. Now, I don't know if political action committees who support him are doing more, but I don't recall seeing an ad for him on national TV and certainly not out here in California. I mean, California, in terms of being a Trump-rich environment, votes-wise, that ship has sailed. There's no freaking way he's going to win here, even if you include the handful of popular votes that Gary Johnson and Jill Stein are going to get out here. You know, well-meaning.
The best I've seen Jill Stein poll was 3% in a Breitbart poll, Scott.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jill Stein and the Libertarian candidate Johnson, on a national basis, they're going to be lucky if between them they garner 6% of the popular vote. So they're non-entities. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, and unless it's, there are states where things can go really, and luckily it's Utah. Between Gary Johnson and the new guy, Eric McMullen, Utah may lose its magic underwear mind this November. But most places, no, I don't... I cannot fathom that, say, Bernie-crats or disaffected Bernie voters generally are going to run over and vote for a guy who doesn't believe in Social Security, you know, Gary Johnson.
No, I can see
some who just really, 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 whatever reason, and you know they vote for they vote for the progressive Palin. Okay, I don't think she poses a threat. Because there is a part of me, Scott, that thinks that this is that we're watching a Harlem Globetrotters game, with the role of the Harlem Globetrotters being played by someone who has walked out onto the court with a hockey stick in the form of Hillary, and the Washington Generals have their shoelaces tied one to each other, and they and they just spend all their time on laying on the court while Hillary hits hockey pucks into the basketball net, or lays them up with them. My metaphor is taking an ass beating here, but you get the idea.
Yeah, I do.
Well, uh oh. Wait. Ron in Raleigh says, "Did I hear a bob, bob, bob? I'm at home for a while. I'm at home at night for a while. Accident at work. I'm monitoring gimmick infringement. Watch it, Scott, and tell Punky to watch it too." You don't want a gimmick infringement suit from Ron and Raleigh.
No, I don't want to run afoul of Ron.
No. All right, you take it easy, Scott.
All right, Bob. As always, it's great, and I don't know about you, but I've been watching these things for decades, and this is the most interesting one yet, and the most scary. So it's going to be quite interesting to watch it unfold.
This is just nuts.
I just hope it unfolds delightfully and doesn't unravel uncontrollably. That's my prayer.
Here, here. Scott, take it easy. Say goodnight to Punky for me.
Goodnight, Punky. See ya.
Chirp. My buddy Scott in San Diego. Note coming in from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. I just got home from work, she says. Trump got as far as he did because state-run television loves a fucking train wreck. Hillary is not winning. Trump is tanking. Big goddamn difference. And I mean, that's how I see it. This is not, it's not like, they made a documentary about Clinton's campaign in 1992 that just, you know, showed, you know, the genius of it. And The brilliance of the Obama campaign in 2008 has been documented far and wide. This ain't that. This is Hillary pedaling for all she's worth on her training wheels tricycle. We're talking about a tricycle with training wheels. And eking out a lead over a no kidding dumbass. So yeah, I'm just say what you will of me, and it's all it is. It's just me. I'm not going to be comfortable. And again, I recognize that even with the election of Hillary Clinton, there's going to be a ton of work to do. It's not like FDR is going to be entering the White House, okay? It's going to be more like, you know, George H.W. Bush is entering the White House. I mean, I caught something from, no, I didn't catch anything. I read a piece today by Robert Reich. And he's pretty clear-eyed. He writes, it looks increasingly likely that Hillary Clinton, a self-described progressive who likes to get things done, quote-unquote, will have her chance starting next January. But how much that's progressive will she actually be able to get done? The Senate may flip to the Democrats, but there's almost no way Democrats will get the 60 votes they need to stop Republicans from filibustering everything she says she wants to do. Meanwhile, he doesn't even bother mentioning, Robert Reich doesn't, that there is no way in the known universe that the Democrats take back the House. Just ain't gonna happen. Robert Reich goes on to say, she's unlikely to have a typical presidential honeymoon because she won't be riding a wave of hope and enthusiasm that typically accompanies a new president into office. She's already more distrusted by the public than any major candidate in recent history. On Election Day, many Americans will be choosing which candidate they loathe the least. By the way, let's do remember that when Robert Reich writes about Hillary Clinton, he's writing about someone he has known for 50 years. He continues, she hasn't established a powerful mandate for what she wants to get done. Her policy proposals are admirably detailed, but cover so much ground that even her most ardent supporters don't have a clear picture of what she stands for. And she's had to spend more time on the campaign trail attacking Trump's outrage du jour than building a case for a few big ideas. To say nothing of the moneyed interests. Wealthy individuals, big corporations, and Wall Street that are more powerful today than at any time since the Gilded Age and don't want progressive change. Even if Hillary sincerely intends to raise taxes on rich Americans in order to pay for universal child care, affordable higher education, and infrastructure spending, the moneyed interests have the clout to stop her. They'll also resist any effort to raise the federal minimum wage to $12 an hour, require employers to offer paid family leave, or push them to share their profits with employees. The heart of American politics, he writes, is now a vicious cycle in which big money has enough political influence to get laws and regulations that make big money even bigger and prevent laws and rules that threaten its wealth and power. And then he goes into some rather interesting analysis. About the importance of Bernie's idea, brand new Congress, and our revolution to support progressive congressional candidates. You know, those things were going to happen whether he received the nomination or not. This is a long-term strategy. But realistically speak, and the one thing he didn't mention, and maybe because it doesn't, maybe because Robert Reich is just, you know, too much the academic and the rationalist and the realist, but he didn't mention the impeachment hearings. I'm convinced that those things are going to happen. They impeached Bill, and they will impeach her. Because Clinton. So, just be aware, if you're an activist, there's going to be plenty of work to be done no matter what happens that Wednesday morning in November. Let's run over to Tennessee and talk to Charlie. Hey, Charlie.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How about you?
No, I'm doing okay. I don't think people are listening to Donald Trump. And if you sit down and listen to the guy, I mean, he's basically telling you in so many words that he's going to screw you. And these people don't have enough sense to sit down and listen to what Trump says and analyze what he says and realize that they're going to get screwed.
Well, it'll be okay if they get screwed, if they get screwed whitely, Charlie.
Mm.
So, that may sound sarcastic, but it's not.
Well, I listened to this. What's this guy's name that was in the Reagan administration? Is his name Kudlow?
Oh, Lawrence Kudlow?
Yeah, basically he says that the people, the wealthy, are the job creators and that they will bring this country back. that he still wants to send our jobs to China. I'm just sitting there listening to him, and it's like, why don't these people wake up and listen to what this guy's saying? Why don't they wake up and listen to what Donald Trump is saying? I mean, the Republicans, they're, you know, they're basically saying that if you don't have money, they're going to screw you. And the people that in this country that are, you know, in what we call the middle class, they're just chomping at the bit to get screwed, I guess. I don't know. It's amazing to me.
But I mean, it's, I mean, that's a rational analysis, Charlie. The thing is, though, it's not why a whole bunch of people are voting for him. A whole bunch of people are voting for Donald Trump because he validates their hate and he confirms their biases. They don't want an America with Mexicans in them. So when he says they're not sending us their best, they're sending rapists, they say, that's our guy. When he says that that Muslims are terrorists and need to be stopped from coming to America, well, if we can do that, then that means America stays a little bit whiter a little bit longer, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess, back whenever I worked at Barksdale Air Force Base, but before I got transferred to Barksdale Air Force Base with the company I was working with, I worked at Kelly Air Force Base, and I was dating a Hispanic woman. And things got pretty serious between us, and I asked her to marry me. And I got transferred to Kelly Air Force Base, and I was talking to the data processing center chief there. And, you know, I told him that I was dating a Hispanic woman. He said, well, he said, the thing you're going to have to learn about Louisiana is there's a lot of people who won't have anything to do with you because of that. And I just looked at him and I was thinking, you can't be serious.
Oh, but yes, he was.
I mean,
absolutely, he was serious.
You know, that was something that was, you know, that was just something that was foreign to me. I mean,
well, which is kind of,
I was born and raised.
And it's kind of surprising too. Because Louisiana is the most Creole of cultures in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess this, I probably was in my late 30s back then. And, you know, I've just sat back and looked at things. I've had a long time to digest this. I'm about 10 years older than you are. And, you know, it just amazes me how people in this country think. We don't behave as a country. It's kind of like we've got a caste system here, and it's going to remain no matter what.
Well, I think that much is absolutely true.
And it's kind of sad. And, you know, I mean, people that are not of the Caucasian race, they have the same hopes, they have the same desires, they feel the same pain, and people just don't realize that.
Right, because they're deeply invested in the concept of otherness, Charlie.
Yeah. And it just, you know, it's kind of sad when you sit back and look at it. And the older I get, I mean, you know, the more you see of it and the more that you really, I guess when you're younger, you kind of think that, well, all this is disappearing and it doesn't exist, but it actually does. And you see it as you get older, and it's, you know, you realize that it's kind of a lost hope.
I don't know when the history of the United States is written in its final form. Maybe that's what the final word is. Lost opportunities.
Yeah. And I just cannot understand. I mean, I don't see. Like I say, the older I get, the more I see of this. I don't really see that much difference between Sarah Palin and Osama bin Laden. I really don't. Except one is a radical Islamist, and the other is a radical, quote, Christian. That's the only.
Well, I think those two things are decidedly similar. But to Osama bin Laden's credit, I will say that he was not an idiot. She is.
Yeah.
And thus the thesis that I was getting at the beginning of the program. Can you imagine what danger we would be in if Donald Trump was a brilliant man?
I think if Donald Trump wasn't a brilliant, if Donald Trump was a brilliant man, I don't think he would be saying half the crap he's saying right now, because he would have more sense than to believe that.
No, he'd dog whistle it, Charlie. He'd do it the Republican way, instead of just putting his id on display for the world. He'd rouse up the white nationalism that runs so deeply in this country, and have people marching in the streets before they knew what happened, and breaking glass and beating people up.
Yeah.
Because see what he is. He's the clown car version of American fascism. When the serious act takes the stage, we're going to be in real trouble.
You know, we're all humans, and you know, I think if people were to sit back and look, all people of different races came from the same place. I mean, we're all human. We all originated the same.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I believe that, and I believe that till the day I die. Now, it may not be popular that I believe that, but that is what I believe.
Well, in the rest of the world, it is. It's just that we tend to impose on the broader world things we see nearer to home. You live in a place that, like I do, that thinks evolution is some sort of satanic plot to keep people from going to heaven.
But I don't know. Well, I was born and raised over in East Tennessee up in the Appalachian Mountains, and here in Middle Tennessee, the culture is entirely different. It's like you're in a different state. It's almost like you're in a different country.
Yeah, except for Nashville itself. I mean, Nashville has a bit of progressivism to it. I saw a story the other day that says that they're going to consider decriminalizing possession of small amounts of marijuana.
Yeah.
Which means that the folks out back of the bars on Lower Broad will finally be able to maybe get high without worrying so much.
But yeah, Nashville, I guess, is a bit more progressive. Hendersonville is just, I mean, that's almost like you're just stepping into Nazi Germany.
with the mega churches doing stand in for the, yeah, exactly. But that's where American fascism it gets its formation, is out of evangelical right-wing Christianity.
The religion industry.
Bingo. Bingo. Good talking to you, Charlie. You doing all right these days?
Yeah, I guess. I'm kind of looking forward to start drawing my pension in another 2.5 months, and I don't know where I'm going to wind up. I may I can afford to take a little bit lesser job and make it. So, I don't know.
Well, hang in there and stay in touch, will you?
Okie doke. Thanks a lot.
All right. Later. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Charlie calling from Middle Tennistan. Quick tech update. You know, we've had we've had lots of problems with the chat room and Apple Macs. Well, it may very well be that that problem has been solved. I just saw something happen in the chat room. Phase 5 came in. For Mac, and so for Mac users to get into the chat room, download VirtualBox. It's a free Windows emulator. Install it, and then install an old copy of Windows 7, and bang, you're in the chat room. Phase 5 is living proof of it. Now, I'm not that conversant with the Mac OS. I can get around, but I don't know, you know, I don't know anything deep down about it. So, you know, don't email me saying, oh my God, no, I would never do that. Don't do that. But it is, it's a way that has been found to work. Note coming from Jen in Australia. Quoting me, eking out a lead over a no-kidding dumbass. No argument, Jen says. He's a dumbass. Bob, I've met a literal madman once, and surprise, 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 Drumpf is so much like him. This guy was a New Yorker, but aside from that, he and the bug share no physical similarities. It was the inner madness that is identical. He was in a rival theater company, and at cast parties, this man would stand always in the center so that everybody could get at least a glance of his magnificence. He would prattle on all night about his huge, tremendous achievements that were, you know, all lies. I remember one particularly gobsmacking lie when he bold-faced bragged that he played the lead in Jacques Brel Is Alive and Well and Living in Paris on Broadway. Okay, the fact that he couldn't sing a note wasn't even the craziest thing. No, the craziest thing was he was bragging to the director of that play. Yeah. He never blinked. He never winced or backed down. He just dug in and plowed forward. Crap. After reading this morning's headlines, Obama bribed New York's attorney general to sue Trump University. That's what the ass-mouthed braggart is going to do, isn't it? Yeah, and Joe and Paula just sent me that very story. It kind of got overlooked because of all the other crazy. But back in February, because it's just sort of bubbled to the surface of the swamp, back in February, Trump claimed that Barack Obama, the President of the United States, bribed the Attorney General of New York to investigate and sue over the great big honking pyramid scheme fraud complex that was Trump University. He really did. It's the producers, isn't it? It is. It is. 18 past the hour, and yeah, we're trying not to start More In Monday in a great big honking hole, but we got $190 in fundraising to do this evening, and thank you to Darlene for getting us started this evening. So, you know, some of it, all of it, any of it, please, just so we don't dig holes all week. And there's Thomas from FYINation.com. What's happening, Thomas?
Hey, Bob. I don't know if this was mentioned earlier. I apologize. I am Johnny come lately to the show. But it is our favorite birthday girl's birthday today. And I am not allowed to I am banned from singing, so I'm not going to be Jules on this. But Phyllis Schlafly's birthday is today. She's 92.
God and doesn't look at a day over 1,612,533.
I just thought I'd take a moment that evil survives.
Evil, Thomas, is a preservative. Yes. No, I didn't realize it was Phyllis Schlafly's birthday. No, yes. but wait. We are not referencing her properly. There's a way you have to say it when you mention her.
The devil?
No.
Damn it.
Phyllis Schlafly, national treasure.
Oh, I think our good friend of some say Portia Bulger would totally disagree with you on that one.
Well, I don't care. Tom Hartman has more on more than one occasion referred to her as Phyllis Schlafly, national treasure.
What
and he wasn't being a smartass.
Oh, that's not nice. You know, the woman who hates the Equal Rights Amendment, the woman who loves abortion, or to hate abortion. You know, I adore Tom Hartman, but man, there are some moments like this that I
don't take my word for it.
Lately, I don't know whose word to take.
Ron in Raleigh is listening right now, and he has heard it so many times that his voice is hoarse from the screaming.
I can't imagine anybody believing this woman is anything other than insane. I mean, I understand when you have a guest on and he's had her on the show before that you get to a point of even liking them because he likes what's that sheriff? Not Mac. The white guy, the one of the Southern, and he's really good friends with him off air.
What, Arpaio?
No. The other Looney Tune that was good buddies with Glenn Beck, and Arpaio isn't white enough. But that said, I understand being friends with a conservative and all, and that's fine and good. I can relate to that. I used to be one. But Phyllis Schlafly is not a national treasure, not a national institution. If anything, she belongs in an insane asylum, and her family too. And I just can't. I one time went too far with a word that is very not nice towards women with her. So that's why I add all the extra L's now, because it's less vulgar, only slightly. Because that woman, to me, is the antithesis of everything that we're fighting against. And I don't know how anybody could call her anything nice. But, you know.
Well, they do.
He is smarter than me. He is smarter than me.
I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah, Phyllis Schlafly. Eagle Forum, wasn't that her?
Yes. And there's a civil war going on there because of her endorsement over T-Rump.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. So there's all that melodrama happening over there. And all that is a right-wing toolbox for a mailing list. And everything else. I mean, it's a fundraiser's a wet dream.
Oh, and by the confirmation coming in. Michael in Madison says, "National treasure." I've heard it too multiple times. Last week, he added revolutionary to her list of accolades.
Well, wait, what is he smoking, and why isn't he sharing? I know it's legal in D.C.
Meanwhile, Bob in Texas says, Phyllis Schlafly, national velvet? Blue velvet. Ew!
I can't understand anything good about this woman and anything she's done.
Well, there isn't. Her entire existence on the planet has been a waste of everything that goes into a human life. There's nothing about her that anybody can say, gee, it was better that she was here than that she was not.
Well, maybe her kids, and they don't even like her. That's the national institution and treasure that we have. Her children don't even like her.
But,
go ahead, Paul.
No, Right Wing Watch even has a happy birthday Phyllis Schlafly post up.
That's how I found out. I was doing show prep, and I saw that, and I was like, oh, Jesus, I need to call Bob if he hasn't seen this yet.
Now, Marty says he always thought Hartman was being snarky. I never understood that. And by the way, Ron says, Ron just wrote in because I conjured him. He said, I heard it. You know who agrees with, no, not you know who agrees. He refers to Hartman as you know who. You know who agrees with her on several constitutional issues, particularly Marbury versus Madison. You know, the seminal Supreme Court case authored by Chief Justice John Marshall that establishes the supremacy of the Supreme Court to be the final arbiter of what is and isn't constitutional.
Yeah, I have a big bone with him on that one. I you know. Oh, Lord. I love Tom, but man, sometimes he gets it wrong, irregardless of how much smarter he is than me. Oh, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Bob, if you don't mind.
Go.
It was totally non-Trump related, totally non-Hillary Clinton related. Our friend, mutual friend Matthias, is going to be hosting Some Say For Me tomorrow night. And in the second hour and third hour of the program, he is going to have a minimum of three Bernie Sanders delegates on the program to talk about where the movement is moving forward to. Some people might know Shawnee Badger, Jeff Day, Portia Bolger. They will be on the program tomorrow.
Very good.
And it's going to be like a Bernie Sanders roundtable. So if you want someplace that's not going to be anything Trump-wise, 10 and 11 o'clock especially, that's going to be the place to be. And I'll, you know, as always, keep links and everything for it for later for people to listen to. But I wanted to get the word out on that because I know you had a great conversation with him the other day. And he's just so damn smart, but he can piss people off and it's fun. But so can I.
Well, in many corners of the broadcast world, provocation is the heart and soul of this here business.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And sometimes it's not even meant to.
I just don't like to particularly practice it. So, I mean.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just how things are said, right? We don't even, like, I know I don't necessarily mean to piss anybody off, but sometimes it just happens to happen with what I'm saying, because that's our view of the truth of the world. You know, I'm sure there are some Tom Hartman fans who are nodding their heads and saying, yes, Phyllis Schlafly is an institution. I don't get how they could see that, but maybe.
Well, okay, she's an institution. I mean, she came to prominence as I'm sure that she was one of those people that young Hillary read as a Goldwater girl because she wrote a defense of Goldwater. Schlafly did.
Yeah.
That's where her shtick begins.
Yeah. And conservatism. And it's, look, I think we fall in the mistake of calling conservatives dumb. They're not dumb. They know how to game the system. That's not dumb. But it's not something to be immortalized either and remembered fondly. And I think that's the mistake that some people might go into, and usually just conservatives. But it's frustrating when progressives do it too for conservatives, or even worse, use conservative things except to editorialize them. You know, like Gateway Pundit and whatnot. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I know.
But, no, I just wanted to leave that nugget with you and help you chew it.
Yeah, that's a nugget. Definitely a nugget.
But I wanted to thank you for letting me call in, Bob, and you have a great rest of the weekend. Hopefully people won't be leaving you in a hole.
I hope not. Thank you. Thank you, Thomas. You have yourself a good evening, and everybody check out Thomas tomorrow evening or on the podcast.
Yes, or on the podcast. Thanks, Bob.
Later. Our buddy Thomas from FYINation.com. Phyllis Schlafly. Okay, if you sing, okay, a conundrum. If you sing Happy Birthday to Phyllis Schlafly, do you sing it to the melody of the Horst Wessel song? Never mind. It's more in Monday. And so, consequently, there are things that you just can't blow past. I got to make sure that my voice is in proper form here. You might want to get the hockey puck out. I'm just saying.
Donald Trump is announcing on his official website an area for people to organize and get ready to be poll watchers and to also be exit pollers to document who's actually voting for who.
Okay, here's the fun part of that. If you fill that out over there, don't. You know what you get in response? A fundraising pitch. Yeah, poll watchers, please.
Because here's the big secret. Donald Trump is doing his own internal polling with some of the top bipartisan pollers in the country. He wants real polls, not spin polls where Reuters samples 15% more Democrats to claim Hillary 15 points ahead. I mean, this is ridiculous. There's all sorts of fraud. They're gaming Google. They're not listing him as a presidential candidate. They're trying to rig the debates. I mean, we've seen.
Because I'm Alex Jones, and I know about polling. I've got a degree in mathematics that I don't have. I know all about statistics. They're like numbers and percentages and stuff. And so he's got the best, most beautiful pollers. Donald Trump does.
The incredible scams. And Trump's not going along with it. He is up front calling it out, calling for local law enforcement to watch for it, calling for poll watchers to watch, and calling for exit polls, which have historically been 3 to 5% margin of error, which is incredibly accurate.
Okay, so there's this question. What are they going to be watching for? People voting while black? Yeah, probably. People not wearing their Make America Great Again hats and T-shirts to go and vote? That would indicate some election fraud or right.
So he's announcing, hey, I've got my own internal polling showing I'm ahead in Ohio by 7 points, showing I'm ahead in Pennsylvania by about 10 points, showing I'm ahead in Florida in some internal polls by 15. And these are real random polls.
Yeah, real random internal polls. Definitely polls.
Now, bear in mind, I mean, there are polls and there are polls. Breitbart just did their own poll because they're heavily in the tank for the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. And they wanted to prove Alex Jones's theory here that somehow or another, everybody's just trying to skew the polls for Hillary. And they hired a polling firm out of Florida whose claim to fame is that its claim to fame is that it once polled a candidate as winning who lost by 96 percentage points. But Donald Trump's got real beautiful, excellent, huge, the very best polls that show him winning. Now, this is not, however, to say that the risk, the fear, is not out there. I mean, I've got a note here from Don in central Pennsylvania, otherwise known as Alabamistan, asking, prior to being a spokesperson for the Trump campaign, was Ms. Katrina Pearson a professor of history at Trump University, perhaps? and signs off Don in central Pennsylvania, where the Trump signs are many and a Hillary sign has yet to be seen. Well, of course not, because people don't want their tires slashed or their houses burnt. Right, but back to this also. Old politics and New York mobsters. Rudy Giuliani's comments. We don't have a real choice when it comes to talking about something here on the Horn, but really, why not just see this sort of brainless rhetorical nonsense for the filler that it is? There's no longer political dialogue in this culture. There are no issues. Words only serve here to fill in the white dead spaces. The fact that such an idiot as Trump is in a position to throw away what has been given to him out of ignorance and sloth and abject fear, all these things are measures of a people beyond desperation. And I would ask, beyond redemption? We've given up, thrown at least two generations to the wolves. We do not work, we do not create, we do not educate, we do not live in real communities. Accountability, public figures making sense of their own private histories, talking shit. Minds are made up to the extent there are any minds at all. As a nation, we barely tread deep waters. Meanwhile, in regard to Phyllis Schlafly, Ancient Women and Their Ilk, Cindy, in the Great Northwest, says, Phyllis Schlafly is an ancient leftover and heroine of Hillary. They live long due to their fear of hell. Can't type today, hands crinkled from arthritis. P.S. Hillary's facelift is really well done. She should share with Phyllis. so I said, if you sing Happy Birthday to Phyllis Schlafly, do you use the melody to the Horst Wessel song? And Ron replied, Ron and Raleigh, more likely to the tune of the Panzerlied. You guys are incorrigible. Oh, but back to those internal polls.
Showing in some polls, Trump is 3 points ahead in California. Margin of error, dead heat. Instead, the Democrats are so arrogant, they're claiming with their fake polls, he's going to lose Georgia. He's going to lose Texas. He's going to lose Utah. Ladies and gentlemen, internal polls, not just by the Trump campaign, but by other major institutions, show Trump on average 7 points ahead in basically California strongholds for the Democrats.
Yeah, no. When we talk about that sort of thing, you have to understand that anything referenced by Alex Jones can be discerned with a magic eight ball or a Ouija board, or both. God damn the stupid! It's breathtaking, just breathtaking. Hey, could it be Todd? Might it be Todd in South Carolina, Stan? Is it Todd? Is that you, Todd?
Might be.
What's happening?
Listen, I have two questions.
Ask them one at a time, please.
Yeah, the first one makes me kind of upset, so I have to slow down.
Breathe. Yes, we're off to a good start here.
Yes, I'm really trying not to be crude. I'm trying to put my different hat on right now, you know, like my professional hat, like I was at work or something. So, all right, why in the world does Giuliani even get airtime? See, this is what I'm trying to figure out. Because he came up as a schmuck during the whole, I mean, he was weak looking. I was going to, see, I'm trying to be, all right, I'm trying to keep this together. He was very weak during 9/11. And that affected a lot of people. It wasn't just New York City. You know, it was the whole area. A lot of people commute to New York City.
Right.
You know, if you have that type of position, you're going to commute. Bucks County, you know, all types of places. Montgomery County, you know. So anyway, you know, he was holed up in some bunker. He was scared. He was scared shitless. He didn't know what the hell he was doing. And, you know, and let me get to the racist part. It's not like this is new. This racism thing has been in him for years, decades. And if you don't, you don't have to believe me. Just Google Giuliani and racism, and you know, do a. I don't know if they still do bullying or whatever, but whatever. You know, next is Lexi. You'll come up with a lot because he has issues. All right. So that's the first thing. That's a question. Can you comment on that?
Well, you said, why does anybody give him airtime? It wasn't a matter of him being given airtime. He was the designated person who was there to introduce Donald Trump at this major, big, huge, beautiful foreign policy speech. So, you know, the cameras are on. But they were also in front of a friendly audience. And the fact that when he said there were no successful radical Islamist attacks in the years prior to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and one person clapped and then stopped. I mean, doesn't that say something? I mean, even they knew that they were like, Jesus Christ, you were there.
Right. It says two things to me. It says, number one, okay, Trump, we say, okay, Trump is, he's just a figurehead. You know, he's a corporate guy, right? When you're corporate, you hire people around you. And that's, you can make that argument. But look who he has around him. And look who he is involving in his campaign. Giuliani is a known racist kind of scoundrel. You know, the guy, what, his wife was dying of cancer, and he was filing papers while she was dying? Is that the same guy?
No, that's Gingrich.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't keep my...
You can't keep your right-wing hypocrites separate. It's okay. A lot of us have that problem, Todd.
Their sheet, you know, there's so many entries on their sheet. They make the font is so small, as opposed to our sheet. You know, it's plainly visible. Anyway, but you know, you have to pay extra for that. You know, guys selling popcorn, you get your sheet, blah blah blah.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah, I mean, kind of globally, because he's been a dick for a while. Let's just be frank. And I just don't like the fact that he gets as much credibility. That's what I'm saying. They give him weight. Like, what he says matters. You know, he needs to really, he's getting almost senile now. He needs to shut the hell up and go enjoy his money and go sit down somewhere. All right. I mean, that's what I think. And, you know, because I get pissed, man. I see him. I'm like, what the fuck, man? Shut up. You're an ass. He's the one who, okay, they were making all kinds. You know, you don't understand. New York City is like a police state now. Ever since 9/11, it's terrible. Like Hunts Point in the Bronx. Hunts Point is nice broad streets, and you know, used to be like light manufacturing, maybe heavy, a little bit. But they arrested everybody. It's like it's deserted. It's just abandoned. It's just nothing. I mean, the abandoned buildings are kept up. It's not like other cities, but maybe they're bringing it back. So anyway, my other question: have you seen this video? Has everybody seen this? Where Alex Jones crashes the TYT.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was some beautiful theater.
Now, I thought they were exaggerating. The reason I bring it up, I'm going straight to the dope, and I mean news and dope too. When I say dope, so that's dope squared. No, that's not squared. Dope. So Alex Jones, his jaw, just like I heard it described, his jaw was going back and forth. I was like, this guy is something. You want something?
Chewing the air gum.
They were out of control. That was really interesting. Because Alex Jones, something's wrong with him. He needs to settle down. That was not cool at all. Now, I heard Scott earlier, and I have to say, I'm not supposed to talk about people, but I like what he had to say. He was pretty articulate in what he had to say. And I have to agree. But, you know, this Trump thing, I said a lot of things over the course of his campaign. I said he would never be the nominee. I was like, he just can't. Because I grew up in the area. Everybody who grew up, he didn't win his own neighborhood because people know him. He's a scoundrel. But I'm not going to get too far ahead. What I'm trying to say is that now that we're where we are, my first inclination, I was thinking, well, he just, because he has enough money, maybe he just wants to prove that all it takes is a lot of money to win the nomination. and then he'll just, you know, he just wants to break the system. And that would really beef up his brand. You know, that was my first inclination. Now, once he got started, I started thinking, well, wait a minute, there might be more facets to this. In other words, everybody can be happy, because maybe he was hired to fracture the Republican Party, as well as make some write-offs on his taxes. Because remember, he needs tax write-offs. I would be totally surprised if he didn't. Now, who doesn't need a tax write-off? When you've got that kind of flow going in and out, you need tax write-offs just as a buffer. So somebody finally, you know, maybe he already knew that. But they were like, yo, man, this is a good, everybody does. So look at Huckabee. He runs every couple of years or whatever, every cycle he runs.
It's a nice racket, right?
Yeah. You know, it's like once you break that barrier, that monetary barrier, you can, it's like a turnkey business. You can jump in and they give you the good tax law attorneys, you know, who to talk to. Yeah, he's a good guy. Talk to him. He'll get you. That's what everybody talks to. Do you follow me?
Yeah. Oh, no, I do. Absolutely, I do.
So now, but wait a minute. But he fulfilled his mission too early, and they didn't anticipate. Now, see, now I'm going to what you were saying. And see, I've lived a lot, you know, different states as an adult. Not a whole lot, but, you know, a lot on the East Coast, different places. And I'm telling you, what you're saying is true, is that he's the great white hope, if you put this in the boxing term. Okay, folks? And I'm not making this shit up. Remember, there's backlash, white lash, there's a lot of stuff going on. And he just says what people want to hear. And
well, depending on how one defines people. I mean, Carol just pointed out, I'm always glad to hear Todd's voice. Please be assured, Todd, there's nothing noble in Trump's quest to break the system. He's just a flaming douchebag.
Well, that's, of course he is. Oh, no. Well,
my thesis runs directly counter to that as of tonight. It just dawned on me like a stroke out of the blue. He's a pathfinder. He's a trailbreaker. Okay, he's doing this. He's screwing up, but in 2020 and 2024, we're and you know, we'll probably see some of it in 18 in the midterms. Todd, what you're going to see, contrary to all of the ha 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 ha, he's killing the Republican Party horse shit out there, is a rebirth of a vicious, meaner, nastier, more hateful, more racist white nationalist Republican Party. And if anybody with a half a brain gets to the head of that thing, it may damned well turn into a juggernaut. Now,
well, that sounds like a talking point.
I don't see anybody else saying that out there, so that probably just means I'm nuts.
No, what I'm saying is that you in a pretty short span of time, you inserted a lot of heavy comments. You know, they have a lot of weight, the comments you made. I just
refuse to underestimate the viciousness of right-wing, evangelical white America.
But you see, they're angry, and they vote. That's what I'm saying. They vote, and it's easy for them to vote. It's very easy for them. They don't have to wait long. It's not a big deal. They got coffee. They roll up, and they're nice. Silverado, you know, Manuel has cleaned it nicely. The wheels are gleaming. And they roll up, you know, in the polling place, and they got their donuts. And they say, hey, buddy, hey, how you doing? Oh, we had a nice party there. How you doing? Yeah, well, I know you. Wait, ID? Oh, you know, we just do that for them.
I mean, there's a reason that Jerry Falwell Jr. is squarely in the Trump camp. And him being both a preacher and the head man at Jerry Falwell University.
You may be right. What he's doing, he's the hole, right? He's that wedge that you use when you're splitting wood. And he's fractured, but recreating the Tea Party. So this is the new Republican Party. This is what we're about. This is it.
Right. And I mean, the GOP as a brand is not going anywhere. It's not like the Whigs are going to morph into the Republicans this time through, because as Robert Reich pointed out in that essay I was talking about earlier, you know, the two major parties are, more than anything else, giant fundraising machines. So all you can do is change those systems. And so the fundraising machine is there for the Republican Party. It's just going to get meaner. And goddamn, how is it that progressives, Todd, are running around there, oh, the Republican Party's dying. Oh, the Republican Party's dead. Blah, blah, ding, dong. Blah, blah, blah. No, they control a majority of the state governments in this country, Todd.
That is exactly what I was going to say. This is what I'm saying. People have really, you know, the civics thing, you know what, you keep, this, the state that I live in, it's in our state constitution. The state is only required to provide a minimally adequate public education. That someone put keystroke or quill or whatever year they made this, a big ballpoint pen in the 70s, who knows? Someone took the effort to write minimally and our children's education, I'm paraphrasing in one sentence, in the state constitution. That, if you live here, you understand how. Let me stop. Okay. So what I'm saying is that nothing good can come of that, I don't think. When you're starting out saying, oh, well, you know, what they can see, that's fine. They know an A from a B or a Z. They're not going to read anyway. You know, whatever. But that's a big deal. And when you ride around, you deal with people. It's one thing if you're autodidactic. Give people the tools, maybe, and they just like Dr. O'Brien has been saying, you know, when you have the right tools with a modicum of education, you can figure out what's going on, maybe. But, you know, just denying people everything, tools, and just saying, oh, mentally adequate, that's a big deal. And this is not the only state like that. So this is where we are. We got this fascist weirdo that, I'm telling you, when you listen to C-SPAN, I listened this morning and I was shocked. See, all right, either way, we are not going to win as rational people. We're not going to win. This is why. Because if Trump wins, we lose. If he loses, we lose. Because there's a whole lot of people. I say this 34%, straight up 34% of this whole population in America that will be pissed off if that man loses. And a lot of them like guns and they drink liquor. Okay? Now, if I'm wrong, tell me now, and I won't even repeat it.
No, you're there. I got no pushback on that. That's why I said even if Hillary wins, we got a little work to do. And we're going to have to be doing that work, looking over our shoulders, because the pump has already been primed for a bunch of white people, angry white people, to say, well, that's just because that crooked Hillary stole the election.
Well,
I mean, right? I mean, you mentioned the Alex Jones thing. Well, right. With Alex Jones was Roger Stone, and it was Roger Stone who said there will be blood in the streets.
Oh, he was such an ass.
If Trump doesn't win.
There's a rumor that guy, Roger Stone, has a tattoo of Nixon on his back. I don't know if it's true. I've not looked at the man that closely. Not that I choose to. I'm just saying. Well, like I said, this is the thing. This is a dilemma because I don't see it. There's not a good way out. There are a lot of people who just want something. The only thing different now is Trump. Bernie's gone. And Trump doesn't even really want to be president now. That's the other thing. He told us, I'm greedy. I'm greedy, greedy, greedy. I make deals, and I love the lower educated. He said that all in the same speech. I know I got to get off. This is the same. This is, I think, is the second or third debate. I'll never forget it. Right at the end, he was so elated. He couldn't believe it. I mean, he told on himself. Because when he was saying greedy, he's like, oh, no, but I'll be greedy for you too, America. You know, not just me. And I make deals. See, he made his deal because at some point, you know, he In other words, he
yeah, and that guy that works for him made some deals. What was it, $12.5 million or $17.5 million in cash written down on a handwritten ledger that was discovered in Ukraine?
Once again, Manafort, people who have been following that, right? He's always been a crook. That was his thing. That's what I'm saying. Look at the people.
I mean, what kind of nasty piece of shit are you that before you were working for Yanukovych, you cut your teeth, you made your chops working for Ferdinand Marcos?
Mercenaries. See, these people are chainyish.
Oh, wait a minute. Time out. That is for creation of the new word, chinyish.
Wow. You have no idea. Look, I'm getting some ribs out now.
Damn.
All right. Thanks,
hey, okay. Wait. You can't do that. We got to have food porn before you go. But also, big thanks going out to Joe and Paula. We've gone from 190 down to 140 to go on fundraising this evening. Thank you very much. That's a little bit of earth thrown into the hole there. That's a whole lot of earth thrown into the hole there. Thank you very much, Joe and Paula. But before you go, you know, as we discussed, it ain't always about the smoking. Sometimes it's about the grilling.
It's about,
so dig this. Manager special at Kroger, Flatiron steak, which most people don't know is the second tenderest cut of beef behind filet mignon. It's thin, so people don't look. I mean, it looks a lot like flank steak, but oh my God, it ain't. So, a little onion powder, a little garlic powder, a little seeded and split serrano pepper in the marinade, big old bottle of Worcestershire sauce.
Oh, yeah.
With blackberry all fruit preserves dissolved in it.
Oh.
And let that sucker marinate for a couple of days.
Oh, my God. No,
then throw it on the 750-degree grill for about 2 minutes to a side. Pull it off. Let it rest. Slice it, slice it against the grain, paper thin. Lay that on a toasted sourdough roll.
Oh, yes.
Lettuce, tomato, grilled red onion on the grill with the steak so it blackens and caramelizes a little bit.
Oh, yes.
And then top it all off with a nice, melty piece of smoky Gouda.
Oh, the Gouda. You gotta love the Dutch. Gouda. Oh, buttery. Oh, it's buttery and delicious. That is amazing sound. Now, no. I was curious about that. Because there's two kinds usually that look flat like that. The London broil.
This is, you'll see it as a butcher's steak, or I mean a butler's steak or a flat iron steak.
I know you said flat iron, but the other one's flat too. Maybe it's not one of them. Another one is flat.
But skirt steak is what you make fajitas out of, and it's tough as hell.
Okay.
This stuff is tender.
That sounds delicious. And whenever I talk to you, I've been thinking about that white barbecue, North Alabama barbecue sauce with the mayonnaise, and I've been thinking about the physics of it. And I think that makes all the sense in the world. The more I've been thinking
about
it.
Well, we'll go into that in some greater depth because there's more stuff that goes into it. And yeah.
Okay.
Because there's some sugar in there for caramelization. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See,
yeah.
That there's a lot you can do with mayonnaise. Like if you run out of eggs, you can use a big dollop of mayonnaise for two eggs.
Oh, that's true, and you can make the white barbecue sauce as a marinade or as a barbecue sauce. You want to make enough for both, and like to put wings or whatever in a big old Ziploc bag of that stuff.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I'm thinking. See, mm-hmm.
It's righteous
because that glaze will turn like a gel, and it will hold the seasoning.
And it turns invisible. It's clear. All you see is the stripe.
People don't even know it's going to be that good.
The stripe marks from the grill. Yeah.
All right, man. See, I got to take out another rack of ribs. Now I'm all primed up. All this food talk.
We got to temper some of the insanity, Todd, and I thank you for it. Indeed.
Hey, you know how we roll.
Absolutely. Todd, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Carol Baker pointing out, imagine how good that would have been marinated in the elderberry jam I sent you. Yeah, if the elderberry jam had lasted. But that was kind of the inspiration for it, because, you know, grape, eh. But it was all fruit, no high fructose corn syrup or any of that stuff. And it was blackberry, so, you know, and it was seedless, so bang, I went for it. And it was fabulous. Oh, it was good. All right, out of here. Thanks again, everybody. Thank you, Darlene, Paula, and Joe. We had 200 to raise tonight, and we raised 100, we raised 60 of it. Thank you very kindly. Tomorrow's fundraising goal will be up around $340. Maybe that'll change overnight with subscribers. Be great to have. We welcome new subscribers. Jump right in if you feel so inclined. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, one and all. Thank you for participating in the program in whatever means by which you so do. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.